This weekend starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
The Republican divide on Trump. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up during this program.
Even though he's the presumptive GOP nominee, presidential hopeful Donald Trump is still trying to unite the party. Here an example of where adjacent counties in Pennsylvania have mixed feelings.
For those of you with kids at home, a new survey identifies which grades represent the most stressful time for moms.
In sports, can the Olympics bring golf out of the rough? We'll explore what the game could offer during Rio this summer.
And plan on doing some antiquing this weekend. We'll have some tips from Frank Fritz from the History Channel program American Pickers.
I started out when I was a kid collecting the staples like stamps and rocks, and then I got older. I started getting into motorcycles, and then I went to cars, and I was a fire inspector for 24 years. When you're a fire inspector, you get inside every single building, and I used to get in a lot of buildings and used to find a lot of different things and just, started collecting.
Frank's story and his tips for finding treasures later in the hour. Presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump is facing some tricky electoral math. For example, two counties adjacent to each other in Pennsylvania see the New York real estate titan in vastly different lights. One appears fully supportive, the other seems to be casting a skeptical eye. More from Wall Street Journal national politics editor Aaron Zitner. Aaron, explain.
Well, we went to two counties in Pennsylvania to find how Donald Trump was being received differently among different kinds of Republicans. The first was suburban Philadelphia, a big county, Montgomery County, with a lot of college-educated, upper-income folks, big professional class, folks working at big corporations and in suburban office parks. And then we went to the county next door, Berks County, and the city there is Reading, Pennsylvania, one of the poorest cities in the country, a former industrial hub, lost a lot of factory jobs, become much more Hispanic in recent years, and more manufacturing, more of the people that work in manufacturing, what is left of it, much lower educational attainment, lower income, and Trump plays differently in these two different counties.
Interesting. All right, so who's saying what in the different counties?
Well, the very things that people like about Trump in the lower-income county give Republicans pause in the upper-income county. In the lower-income county, they like his bravura. They like his strong personality. They like the Make America Great Again catchphrase. And they have been through hard times, and Make America Great Again means something to them and means restoring a manufacturing base and factory jobs and getting incomes to rise. This is a city that sunk to become at one point the most impoverished city in America and has, you know, bounced around at the bottom of the income list and when cities are ranked by income. And they're hungry for someone to come in and shake things up. And they don't care so much about policy beyond immigration and trade. They say policy can wait. We don't need his tax plan now. Next door in the higher income county, people are worried by Trump's personality. They find his comments about women, they take to heart a little more. The first thing that Republican officials there want is him to act more presidential so that he doesn't, they, in their view, damage other Republicans on the ticket by raising the chances that people will sit home and not vote for anyone. And they want more policy. They want his personality to be married to substance.
Got it. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal national politics editor Aaron Zitner. His piece is called In Adjacent Pennsylvania Counties, Republicans Are Split on Donald Trump. And he focused in around areas surrounding Philadelphia and Reading. So you say in Montgomery County, which borders Philadelphia, Republicans fear Mr. Trump could amplify a recent tilt into the Democratic camp. Explain that.
Well, You know, Pennsylvania is a great state because it's one that always glimmers and beckons to the Republican Party, but never delivers. You can remember John McCain and Mitt Romney both saying, gee, we're going to make a play for Pennsylvania, but it hasn't voted Republican in a presidential election since the 1980s. And the reason is that Philadelphia, the biggest population center, which is, you know, diverse and African-American, produces a lot of Democratic votes, and the diverse, fairly wealthy and very populous counties around Philadelphia have been trending Democratic. Republicans come out of Philadelphia with a 500,000 vote deficit. That's what it was in 2012, and they have to go to the rest of the state to make up 500,000 votes, and they haven't been able to do it. Obama won the state by 300,000. So elsewhere in the state, they came up with 200,000 votes. The big populous counties around Philadelphia is a place you'd want to fish for votes because that's where the people are, and unfortunately for the Republicans, those counties have been trending Democratic, and the party officials we talked to there last week worried that Donald Trump would exacerbate that trend, cause more Republicans to stay home, and amplify this tilt toward the Democratic Party. Right. That's the flip side of what happens in the lower income county, where there's a rallying effect around Donald Trump.
All right, so will Mr. Trump, you think, make a play for that area by trying to accommodate their wishes there in Montgomery County?
Well, two questions there. We think he will make a play. We think that Donald Trump, and a lot of people think Donald Trump, is changing the electoral map in this sense. Many of the traditional swing states, Colorado, Nevada, Florida, are very diverse and have large Hispanic populations. Nevada, for instance, I think has had the most demographic change of any state since 2012, with whites shrinking as a share of the electorate and non-whites rising. Those states become harder for Donald Trump.
Thanks, Aaron. Wall Street Journal national politics editor Aaron Zitner. 13 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Let's take a moment to share a message from our sponsor, Google. You might be surprised how many people are looking for your business on Google every day, not necessarily by name, but by the products or services that your business offers. When people are searching for these things, it means they're interested in them, and that's exactly when your business should be there. The good news is it's easy to make that happen. Just run an ad on Google. You don't have to be a marketing genius either. Creating an ad takes just a few minutes. Head on over to g.co/GordonDeal to learn more. There's even a special offer waiting for you. That's g.co/GordonDeal. You've heard about how dangerous the Zika virus can be to humans with its ties to birth defects, but another issue is its danger to pets. What few people realize is that the same mosquitoes carrying the Zika virus also cause heartworms that cause serious problems for pets. More from Dr. Tom Nelson, veterinarian and former president of the American Heartworm Society. Tom, what should we know?
The Zika virus does not infect your pet, but the same mosquito that transmits Zika viruses also transmits heartworms to your pets. And that's a big concern because anything you're going to do to protect your pet from that mosquito is also going to protect you from the Zika virus.
Interesting. All right. I did not realize that connection. So what is it that we need to do here? Is the warm weather approaches, obviously, and the pets may be outside more often?
Well, yeah, heartworms are something that's it's especially in warmer weather when mosquitoes are very, very active is the most prevalent time. You know, traditionally, we protect it from heartworms by using either a monthly oral or topical product along or the injectable product last 6 months. But now we're talking about using a multimodal approach or a double defense approach. We're not only using the FDA-approved products, also using EPA-approved mosquito repellent. Because we have data out there showing now that we can actually repel mosquitoes and keep them from biting, which increases the protection of your pet from heartworm.
Right.
And
yeah.
If you can protect your pet from those mosquitoes, it also will protect you, your family members, from the mosquitoes too. Because any mosquito that comes in contact with a dog with these repellents, it actually reduces the number of mosquitoes in your area.
Right. All right. So what kind of mosquito repellent? Like, you know, we put it on, you know, for going outside at, say, dusk, for example. Do you do the same thing with a dog?
Exactly. So if you're having to use mosquito repellents when you're outside for the barbecue, you need to consider also using them for your dog. But we have to use a different repellent where we typically, in people, DEET is the most common one that we use. DEET will actually start collecting in tissues of your pets and cause toxicity. So we have to use the products that are approved for a pet, a dog in particular. Permethrin is what we use in dogs. Cats are separate products, but your veterinarian can give that information of what products you can use that actually are safe on your pet that also will help repel mosquitoes.
We're speaking with Dr. Tom Nelson, veterinarian, also former president of the American Heartworm Society, and we're talking about Zika virus, heartworm, and your pet. Is that stuff readily available in, say, pet stores, or is that typically coming through a vet's office?
Well, some of them are really at pet stores, but the big thing is getting the right information and reading the package insert. Because so frequently we'll see people that will pick up a product that's labeled for a dog and inadvertently put it on their cat. So you have to be sure you get one that's approved for the dog or the cat, particularly for that species.
All right. Well, you're speaking, I don't know, but my language right now, I got two dogs and then two cats. The cats don't go outside, but do they need to be protected in addition?
Well, I ask you a question. Mosquitoes ever get in your house?
Yeah, I guess so.
So, and we now know cats are just as likely to get infected with heartworm as dogs. It's a totally different disease process in the cat, where the dog is a cardiovascular disease, and the cat is pulmonary. They may never get the adult worm, but all these asthmatic cats, allergic bronchitis cats, we know half of those cats are probably caused by heartworm larvae. And we look at the data of cats that are inside, you know, like 27% of the cats that were ever diagnosed with heartworm were considered inside-only cats, according to the owner, because mosquitoes do get in their house, especially in these, you know, highly endemic areas like the coastal states, the Mississippi Valley, where mosquitoes are very, very large, large numbers.
Yeah. So back up a second and explain what exactly heartworm is.
Well, heartworm, this is a worm that's, an adult worm is 12 to 14 inches long. And a dog or a wild canid like a coyote are the natural reservoir. And these worms produce little microscopic larvae there in the bloodstream that mosquitoes will pick up when they feed. And they go through a couple molts inside the mosquito, then they go about another animal, and they're transmitted. And dogs are the primary host, but it's been actually found in over 30 species. We now know cats. There's over 300 cases actually been diagnosed in people. So ferrets are highly susceptible. So protecting your dog is also going to protect all your family members.
So normally I think where I am in the Northeast here in New Jersey, I think that whenever there's tremendous amount of snow over the winter that sits around for a long time, that leads to a bad mosquito season. But we really only had one giant storm this winter. What does this mosquito season look like, I guess, and especially factoring in the Zika virus?
Well, things have changed as far as you think about environmentally changed and that. We used to talk about, especially in your part of the country, you're only using heartworm vengeance 6 months out of the year. But because of changes in mosquito populations, especially the Aedes albopictus, which is the Asian tiger mosquito, that mosquito can actually overwinter. And it will get in storm drains down in sewer systems, and all it has to do is warm up for a couple weeks, like we see like this past year. And we don't have such a strong winter. And so the heartworm transmission go year-round. But mosquitoes are a big problem. And, yes, lots of water. When we have a lot of rain, a lot of snow, we're going to see large numbers. But we see mosquitoes all the time.
Thanks, Tom. Dr. Tom Nelson, veterinarian, also former president of the American Heartworm Society. 22 minutes now after the hour on this weekend. You know, after more than a 100-year absence from the Olympics, the sport of golf, and, of course, the $70 billion industry that supports it, has a unique opportunity in Rio de Janeiro to hit its way out of the bunker this summer. It's a story from Tim Marson, reporter at International Business Times. Tim, what have you found?
Golf has been away for 112 years, and the younger generation kind of has been slower to join up. And there's kind of a threefold reason that people kind of think this. And one is that golf courses are getting harder, so that's kind of pushing people away. They're more difficult. A golf round can take like 4 hours, and, you know, it's a fast-paced society, and people don't really want to take 4 hours to kind of just play a round of golf. And the other is that, you know, golf has kind of continually fought this this perception that it's an elitist sport.
Yeah.
And some people don't want to join up and play in this elitist sport, and there is kind of a prohibitive kind of cost of entry to play the sport.
for sure. All right, so what might the Olympics do then?
Well, what they're hoping, what golf officials are hoping, is that it'll be this kind of tool for global expansion, and especially in China and Latin America, where the game's growing, there's kind of a middle class that's growing and has the ability to play the sport. They're hoping that it can serve as a tool to kind of, to recruit new people to the sport.
Okay. We're speaking with Tim Marson, breaking news reporter at International Business Times. He's got a feature entitled, Can the Olympics Save Golf? What does it need? Like, right, it's going to be on TV in a couple billion homes, I guess, this summer at the Olympics. Does it need a personality? You know, an Olympian people can fall in love with or something. What do they want?
That's one of the hopes. When I talked with officials who are in charge of spreading the game, that's what they want. It'd be great to have somebody from, you know, China or Latin America or from Brazil or from somewhere where they can sell to say, hey, look at this person. You know, this person looks like you. This person has a similar story to you, and they like golf. This is a sport for you. You know, it's not this elitist or sport. This is an elitist sport that isn't for you and you don't want to join up and play. And it's kind of a way to introduce more people to the game.
Oh. All right, so one line in your story I want you to follow up on. You said tensions between elite players and golf officials over the tournament setup at the Olympics could put a damper on the effort. Meaning what?
Well, one of the big tensions is that the tournaments, the Olympic tournament, is scheduled right in the middle of the pro season. And golf doesn't have a history with the Olympics, and there isn't a big payday for playing in the Olympics, for winning a gold medal. So a gold medal doesn't really mean that much to some of the top pros. And we've already seen some of the big names drop out. You've got Australian Adam Scott, who's in the top 10 in the world. He dropped out. He said something along the lines of course I want to represent my country, but I feel like I do that every week. So it just doesn't mean as much to them. And you know, there's a lot of travel involved. There's the Zika virus that everybody's always a little bit concerned about. So, you know, some people are just deciding that it's not worth it to go play in the Olympic tournament and take time off from a pretty lucrative pro schedule.
All right, thanks, Tim. Tim Marson, reporter at International Business Times. You know why they call it golf, right? My dad told me this. Because the F word was already taken. It's 30 minutes after the hour on This Weekend. If you're looking to grow or relocate your business, there are three numbers you should know. 10, 2000, and 6. 10 stands for Michigan's ranking as a top 10 pro-business state. 2000 is the number of unnecessary regulations Michigan has eliminated in the last 5 years. And 6 stands for Michigan's rank for best entrepreneurial climate. All those numbers add up to the one state that has all that and more, Michigan. Go to michiganbusiness.org to learn more. Definitely true in my house. Mothers feel more anxious, dissatisfied, and doubtful about their own parenting skills when their children are in middle school than at any other stage. My wife, Kelly, definitely. More from This Weekend's Jennifer Koschenka.
What stresses you out? If you're a mother, it's probably your middle school age kids. The Wall Street Journal's Sue Schellenbarger has more on some new parenting research. Sue, what does this latest study show us?
Well, a couple of studies have shown that of all the stages of child rearing, from birth through young adult children, the toughest one for mothers and for parents in general is the middle school years, grades 6 through 8. There's so many changes going on both for the kids and the parents that it can be a very tough time.
Why is this different for mothers as opposed to fathers, or is it?
Well, we don't really know as much about fathers' experience as we do about mothers. One study at Wake Forest University, however, did look at both mothers and fathers side by side and found that both moms and dads experience a loss of confidence in their parenting abilities in that same stage. So we do know that much about fathers. A much deeper look at mothers only was done by researchers at Arizona State University, and they looked more into the emotional factors and found that both personal distress was very high during the middle school years, and one's feeling of fulfillment tended to be very low.
Sue, certainly as a kid, I remember middle school being stressful. Why is it so stressful for parents?
It's usually not noticed, but parents also have to change friendship groups. Often they've been friends with the parents of their kids' elementary school friends, and middle schools, of course, often break up those classroom groups. Middle schools have parents keep their distance, where elementary schools sometimes would welcome them more at events. And you really were so much more closely involved with your child's social life in elementary school, and that brought you in contact with other parents. No longer happens in middle school. So there are many ways a parent can begin to feel very isolated. At the same time, the kid's behavior may become kind of rebellious or testy.
And why is this a little bit more stressful during middle school as opposed to high school? Is there any research on that?
Well, yes. The researchers at Arizona State compared all stages from infancy through young adulthood. High school was not as fraught as middle school. I think there are a couple of reasons for that. First, everybody has adjusted to the new school setting with the larger buildings and the more impersonal class structures. And also high schoolers tend to be, by and large, a little more settled than the middle schoolers who are just hit puberty and they're going through all kinds of mood swings and social adjustments. Very tough time.
I read in your story that the mothers of infants and grown children are actually happiest. That's a little surprising.
Researchers were surprised by the infant mothers, too. And I think they concluded that while infancy is very difficult, you may be exhausted and not get sleep. There are compensating advantages such as the joy of holding your newborn or the fun of playing with that baby. And they theorize that that's probably what led to moms of infants reporting overall better well-being.
Any advice for a mother who is stressed out during this middle school period?
It came through loud and clear, both as I interviewed experts and parents, that the number one thing to guard against is feeling isolated. Many parents thought that maybe their kid was the only one misbehaving or they were the only ones feeling lonely and they didn't talk to anyone and shut down. What you need to do is really take care of your friendships during this time. The researcher at Arizona State found that friendships can really help allay the isolation, increase your sense of personal well-being, make frequent contact with friends. Don't just say, I have great friends, and then not see them. And also be mindful that your child's behavior, while it might be a pain, is probably normal. It's normal for kids to push away, to try to gain their independence, to rebel a little bit, and to become pretty cranky, where maybe they've been very pleasant human beings up to that point. So keep all those things in mind, and you won't feel quite like such an oddball.
Thanks, Sue. Wall Street Journal columnist Sue Schellenbarger and this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka. That means I only have two years left of this. My daughter's in sixth grade. 21 minutes now before the hour on This Weekend. Time now for a finance update, and it's brought to you by Lexington Hotels. Come as a guest, leave as a friend at Lexington Inns and Hotels. We'll treat you to exceptional service and a hometown touch. Visit LexingtonHotels.com. Not to throw cold water on the campfire celebrating college graduations around the country right now, but the reality of student loans is about to set in. Personal finance expert Jordan Goodman, known as America's Money Answers Man, says this is the next big loan bubble. So what's a family to do? Jordan, give us some of those scary numbers.
Well, we currently have about $1.3 trillion in student loan debt. This graduation season, we're going to add about $100 billion in new debt to that. So pretty soon, we're going to get up to $1.5 trillion. The average student is graduating with about $30,000 in student loan debt. That's the average. And many people, way more than that, 50, 100, 150,000 undergraduate. And then if you add graduate on top of it, law school, medical school, business school, another 200,000, 300,000, 400,000, just unbelievable. So that it's a huge problem for an awful lot of people.
Wow. All right, so those are huge numbers. How much of that is not getting paid off when you get into the couple of hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of student loan debt?
Well, a lot of it, about 20% of it is delinquent. But you can't get rid of it, Gordon, no matter what. 10 years ago, the bankruptcy bill that was passed said that student loan debt is not dischargeable in bankruptcy. Only that and IRS debt are not dischargeable.
Wow.
So you could go to the grave with it and never get it paid off. These are 30-year loans that people are taking on in many cases before they even get their first job.
Wow. Doesn't have to be that way, does it?
Well, no. Certainly the solution is to save and invest up front. Using 529 plans, every dollar you can save and invest up front is one you don't have to borrow when you get to school. So people are saving something, but nothing close with the tuitions where they are today. There's 150 colleges over $60,000 in tuition right now.
Oh,
so it's just
goodness.
Staggering for people. Now, there are some things you can do once you get out of school to make it a little bit better. You can't get rid of them, but you can pay them off a little bit faster. The first thing is consolidate your loans. There's a whole bunch of different loans at different interest rates. Consolidate them into one loan at the lowest possible rate. Through the Federal Consolidation Program. There's a website to help people do that, which is consolidatecollege.com. So that's the first thing you can do. The second thing you can do, a lot of people don't realize this, is you can refinance your student loans into one loan at an interest rate as low as 2%.
Okay.
So you combine your federal loans and your private loans into one at a place called Social Finance. And their website is SoFi.com, SOFI.com/moneyanswers. And you, depending on your situation, if you have good credit, you can get as low as 2% and make one payment, and that'll help you pay it off faster. And the third thing you can do is what's called the Income-Based Repayment Program, the IBR program, which says that if you make certain meet certain criteria, after 10 years of paying the minimum on your student loan, no matter how much you owe, the rest of it can be forgiven. And those criteria are you work for the government, state, local, federal, post office, military, any kind of government agency. You work in the nonprofit sector, 501c3, a church, foundation, charity, anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or you have what's called hardship provisions, where you're really up against it and you can kind of show tremendous financial hardship. And that website I gave you before, consolidatecollege.com, can see if you qualify for that. So if you can qualify for the IBR program, 10 years down the road, you'll get some relief. Those are the three basic things people can do in this enormous amount of debt burden these days.
Thanks, Jordan. Jordan Goodman, personal finance expert known as America's Money Answers Man. It's 13 minutes now before the hour on This Weekend. Let's take a moment to share a message from our sponsor, Google. You might be surprised how many people are looking for your business on Google every day, not necessarily by name, but by the products or services that your business offers. When people are searching for these things, it means they're interested in them, and that's exactly when your business should be there. The good news is it's easy to make that happen. Just run an ad on Google. You don't have to be a marketing genius either. Creating an ad takes just a few minutes. Head on over to g.co/GordonDeal to learn more. There's even a special offer waiting for you. That's g.co/GordonDeal. Ever wonder what it would be like to stumble across something of exceptional value at like a garage sale or a flea market? Who better to get tips from than Frank Fritz from the TV show American Pickers on the History Channel? He spends most of his days digging through barns, garages, and junkyards. Frank, what do you recommend?
I mean, always, you know, buy what you like, you know. Always buy what you like. Buy the best quality, not quantity, quality, that you can afford, you know. And an old man told me one time, you know, buy what you like, because if you can't sell it, you're stuck with it. At least you like it, you know.
How'd you ever get started in something like this, by the way?
I started out when I was a kid. I started out collecting the staples, like stamps and rocks and beer cans and, you know, just all the staples. And then I got older. I started getting into motorcycles, and then I went to cars. And I was a fire inspector for 24 years. So when you're a fire inspector, you get inside every single building. And I used to get in a lot of buildings and used to find a lot of different things and just, you know, started collecting.
All right, so what are the tips kind of on finding that one item, maybe that hot treasure item?
Well, you know, it's all about education, you know, about educating yourself, you know. You know, pick something that you like, and then there's something you like to buy, and then educate yourself on it, you know. None of us know everything about all the flea markets. I don't know everything about pottery, or I don't know everything about framed art, you know, but I do know a lot about toys, you know. That's one thing I've spent a lot of time educating myself. And then you have to go to toy shows, you know, and then you go, you know, hands-on is the best way to do it. You know, you can sit on the internet and press buttons and try to buy stuff, you know, but the way to, you know, find a reputable dealer, somebody you can deal with, and find the stuff, you know, put it in your hands. That's the only way I can tell people to do it.
What's trending these days, by the way? Anything that's super hot?
Trending these days, I mean, everything's always going to be, you know, there's always going to be mid-century furniture is real hot right now, but you're always going to have your staples, you know. A thing that just happened to me here, I was excited. I just teamed up with Valvoline. Valvoline has been in business for 150 years, and what we've got going now is we've got a collector's cup search. And what that is people were looking for vintage oil cans, we're looking for signs, we're looking for lapel pins, we're looking for stuff, anything that's made by Valvoline. And since they've been in business for 150 years, I mean, there's some stuff from the teens, the 20s, the 30s, you know, stuffed away in people's attics. That's what we're looking for. And what people can do there also is they can go to teamvalvoline.com, and they can upload their products and upload whatever they found, and then they can, you know, they have a chance to be on the website. So that's kind of a cool thing, you know. And let's face it, I'm into motorcycles heavy. I mean, I've got oil running through my blood.
We're speaking with Frank Fritz from American Pickers on the History Channel. We're talking about how to pick the best or most valuable antique. The best places to go. Could it be somebody's yard sale or flea market or storage place?
Flea markets are going to be your best. That's your biggest bang for your buck, because you get to see the most stuff. But, people's garage sales, flea markets, all that kind of stuff. You never know what people have in their garage sale, But then again, you have to know what to be able to buy. You have to, you have to do a little research, and if you find that item, everybody can hit a home run once in a while.
All right. Thanks, Frank. Frank Fritz from American Pickers on the History Channel. It's 6 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. So the Preakness Stakes is this weekend, the second horse race in the Triple Crown. Nyquist will try to repeat his win at the Kentucky Derby. CNN has a couple of reasons why the Preakness Stakes is one to watch. Number one, the iconic Black-Eyed Susan blanket. For the winning horse, the blanket takes 3 days to create, featuring 80 bunches of normal yellow daisies strung together and attached to a rubber base with the underside covered in thick felt. Number two, the paintwork continues atop the old clubhouse, where each year the weather vane is decked in the winner's colors. The unusual tradition started in 1909 after the original weather vane was struck by lightning and had to be replaced. And number three, the trophy is so valuable, not even the winners are allowed to hold it. The mammoth 13-kilogram solid silver Woodlawn vase is worth $1 million, making it the most valuable trophy in American sports. It's made by Tiffany & Company. The trophy now remains on permanent display at the Baltimore Museum of Art, with winners instead giving a $30,000 replica trophy. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.